Welcome to Profiles in Prosperity, the leading podcast for residential service contractors, sponsored by Service Roundtable and hosted by David Heimer.
Hi, everybody. We're going to interview Ken Goodrich. How great is that? Yeah? Yeah. Yeah. So let me tell you just a couple things about Ken. He has a long, diverse history in our industry. He started in the HVAC industry as a boy, holding the flashlight for his dad at night. Today, he's the CEO of Gettle Air Conditioning and Plumbing. He's got locations all over the U.S., more than $200 million in revenue. How cool is that, right? Along the way, he's had the struggles of a small contractor. He's grown large companies. He's acquired. He's sold. He's done just about everything in the industry. He's amassed incredible knowledge and experience. He's been recognized a number of times. Contractor of the Year, Most Admired Business Leader, Business Professional of the Year, Entrepreneur of the Year, Contracting Business Hall of Fame. That's just a few of the awards, but, you know, I've only got a limited time up here, right? So I can't go through all of them. Ken shared his struggles and successes in The E-Myth Contractor, which he co-authored with Michael Gerber. If you haven't read this book, you should. It's a fabulous book. And Ken has unique insight into the current industry trends in mergers and acquisitions. That's what we're going to talk to him about today. So please welcome Ken Goodrich.
That was a big introduction. I had no idea. Thank you.
Thank you.
Made me tired listening to it.
Thank you for being here. So I've got a lot of important questions to ask you, but first I've got to ask you the question that I know the audience really wants to know the answer to, and that is, what's your secret for weight loss? Because you have lost a ton. You're looking really good. What's the secret?
Don't eat. No, I got to this place, and you know, I think most of us all can relate to this, is that sometimes you can let your business be all-consuming. You know, you get so myopic on it and focus on it that you don't pay attention to other parts of your life, including yourself and your health. And I just, over time and my journey, and I'm pushing so hard and I'm setting goals and trying to climb this mountain that I've created for myself, that I woke up one day and I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to get up tomorrow. I physically felt like I didn't know if I was going to wake up the next day. And I decided I had to make a change. So I made a decision and I got my diet right. I stopped drinking. You know, I was coming home at night and cracking the expensive wine and all that stuff. And it adds up, the calories. And anyway, so I stopped that and I started walking. And I just kind of, I said, look, I haven't had a history or track record of going to the gym for a long time. So I'm just going to do something I know I can do. I can walk. And I started a routine of putting on my earbuds and walking and doing all my morning business meetings that way. And so I try to get, you know, hour, 2 hours a day in walking, and that was really, that's the secret formula. You know, watch your calories, don't drink, and walk, and exercise a little bit, right? All the stuff they tell you to do, and, you know, we always go off, has to be the super South Beast diet, and this or that, and the Atkins, but just do the simple stuff. Anyway, for that journey, you know, I just got a better life routine about me, and I took about a year, but I lost 100 pounds.
Wow. Wow, how cool is that? Very impressive. Way to go.
Thank you.
All right, let's talk about business stuff. You have been through a ton of acquisitions and divestitures in your business career. Right now, we're going through this phenomenal time where it's taking off again. We have had periods of consolidation before. What is different about this one?
I think this one is predominantly filled by private equity groups, and private equity groups are not much different than us owning our own business. It's private parties or companies that are investing in these businesses. Now, most of these private equity groups, they get their money from family offices or funds like retirement funds, you know, the Minneapolis Police and Firemen's Retirement, right? And they get that money, they invest it along, you know, with the PE group, and they share in the profits of that. And that's how they get their funding. But private equity is not public money, so it doesn't have the pressure of the public markets that you have to perform a stock price to. So back, you know, I was part of the original consolidation in the mid-90s, and, you know, was a founding member of ARS, and it was just a whole different world. And there's lots of case studies about taking good businesses and put them in the public thing, and then, you know, you have to be sensitive to the stock price. And sometimes the stock price makes you do things that aren't long-term thinking, or maybe not the best thing for the business, but it's trying to feed the price and the value to keep the investors engaged. So the interests aren't aligned. So anyway, you know, back in the mid-90s, they had those consolidation going on. They were public companies, and, you know, they have their certain challenges and nuances. And I will say at that time, there wasn't the technology there is today. So one of the other challenges was, is that, you know, I was part of a company where we had over 90 branches, and we were faxing in daily reports to try to, you know, keep track of what we're doing. Some companies were very successful at that, but in the whole in the HVAC industry, it didn't work too well. And then, you know, they just, the formula was wrong, and they didn't engage the old management teams. And it's what I tell my people all the time. Starts bad, ends bad. So that one ended bad. Then there was another little group in the early 2000s, you know, the one-hour air franchises and things like that. They were rolling up. That was a little bit different. It started to get into some private equity, but smaller firms and less pressure to a stock price, but, you know, obviously a pressure to perform. And then this latest realm came about, and I think it's really been driven by the technology of the industry. It's pretty clear now that you can have technology and run much larger businesses, much larger enterprises. And because of the nature of our business, it's consistent, it's growing every single year, it has a nice profitability, it doesn't require a lot of capital because you can run a negative working capital model, things like that. It's very attractive to the PE space. And so they started getting it in there. And, you know, we are now the lucky recipients of that, driving up that market. So the difference is we have technology now that allows the scaled platforms to run, and it doesn't have the public pressure. Not to say that the private equity guys don't have pressure, because those guys are a different breed from what I've experienced in my years as a contractor. I mean, they are driven to succeed and hit marks and grow that company and grow the value of the company at a rapid pace. And what I'm learning from that is, so much of us in our business, we hit a certain point, a comfort zone, a comfort level, and we just kind of slow down and just take it easy and live off that comfort zone. And, you know the saying, you're either green or growing or brown and dying, right? So when they start to slow down, they start to retract. But these guys, it's about growth. It's about improving EBITDA, improving performance, and, you know, looking for new opportunities to grow every single day.
There are quite a few private equity companies in this, right, that are looking for HVAC companies now and plumbing companies.
Yeah, I was surprised. I was at the ACA convention last week, and I was talking to a broker, and he has 79. He's the broker who's done the majority of the bigger deals in the space, but he said, he's talking to 79 PE groups that are involved in our space now.
Is that why the multiples have gone up? I mean, there's, I guess, a lot of competition for contractors, the businesses they're trying to buy. Is that your perception?
Yes. You know, it's the old supply and demand, right?
So yeah.
As the values continue to go up and they keep paying, they keep exiting with bigger values and more returns on their capital, that it gets more and more sexy. I talked at the ACA convention, though. I did say, they said, well, when is it going to end? I said, when one hits the wall, when one of these big behemoths hits the wall and scares the investors, that's when it'll slow down.
Yeah.
We also have other, you know, financial considerations. Interest rates are going up. That's going to slow everything down. You know, right now it's free money. These guys are paying these multiples, but there's no cost to capital. So they can pay a lot more.
So you talked a little bit about the strategies. You sort of compared and contrast what was happening in the 90s with what's happening now. Fundamentally, when you acquire a bunch of companies like that, there's two basic strategies. One is kind of leave the companies as they are, let them operate with existing management, just push them to grow. The other is you centralize as much as you can. Whatever functions you can centralize and get economies of scale, you do that. What are the challenges of those, and is there one that you think is a better approach?
You know, I have my reasoning and a long history with Gettle air conditioning. As you know, I started holding the flashlight for my dad when I was 10. The first air conditioner I ever lit up with a flashlight was a Gettle. My dad became a Gettle dealer, and you know, I grew up repairing, installing, and selling Gettles, you know, my whole life. And then one thing led to another, and I was able to buy the company. So for me, you know, my mission was to Gettleize the nation. I want to take this brand, and Gettle actually invented the residential air conditioner. And so I want to take this brand and give it its due and take it across the nation and let everybody experience what the Gettle service and the Gettle systems are all about. So that was my mission. And it seemed to resonate, you know, as I get out in the investment community, it really resonates with them, the single brand strategy. Because at the end of the day, if you're going to scale something across the U.S. and make a meaningful brand, you can't have all these different names. Now, there's other strategies whereby they'll keep management in place and keep the names in place and, you know, just leave them alone and let them grow in each market. But we've seen that game play out. I don't buy that game. I think that's just a safe play. It's like, let's just buy them. Let's leave them alone. Let's let them grow a little bit. But they're going to hit the wall one day, because where are they going to go with that? You know, yeah, we have 72 different named businesses all across the country with different softwares and different, maybe they get the same software, but, you know, different brands and different messages and different go-to-market strategies and different. It's very hard to manage that. Not to mention, it doesn't scale as well. It doesn't grow as well. What if Tesla started buying up all the other car manufacturers and they called, this is my Chevy electric car and my Ford electric car? It really wouldn't have the same cachet, right? So for me, and from what my conversations were with some of the big investors that we've dealt with, is the single brand strategy wins the day. It's more difficult, though. It's a very difficult proposition. So when I look at these companies that are holding on to the old brand, I just look at it like, they're just holding it together for a period of time until they figure it out. Because at the end of the day, if you're really going to have a big national brand, you got to be the same brand, right?
Yeah, makes sense.
Did I answer your question there?
Yes.
Okay.
I think so, yeah.
Sometimes I get going. I don't know where I started.
So you have done a lot of acquisitions. You're continuing to grow. I noticed I was in San Antonio not too long ago, saw the big Gettle ad up on the highway. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
How many states are you in at this point?
We're in four. Let's see, Nevada, Arizona, California, and Texas, yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. Congratulations. You're still looking to grow. What do you look for in an acquisition target?
You know, I'm a little bit different, I think. I look at HVAC and plumbing companies as pizza. Like pizza.
Sure, everybody says that.
Meaning, like, there's never any bad pizza, right? It's only degrees of good in pizza. You know, we can take a 5-day-old pizza, put it in the microwave, and it's
awesome,
great, right?
Yeah.
So, I just, you know, we've got pretty good at, like, finding the gem inside of all the different businesses and the different models. And so we're pretty open to looking at all kinds of things. I mean, we picked up some very unique and interesting go-to-market strategies lately. And, you know, I'll adjust them to kind of where I seem to be, but I'll take out kind of their unique strategies and try to apply it to the other businesses. But when it comes down, what I'm really looking for is, I'd look at any business. But what I'd really want is, I want a good running business with a track record of growth, got a curious, interested, driven management team that wants to expand their horizons and be part of a bigger game. Right now, you can make such big money on your current operations and then take that and leverage it into new opportunities, that I'm looking for people with management teams that want to join that group and grow something great and expand their perspective. I mean, I've started, like most everybody here, in a service truck. But because of my experiences that I found myself into, you know, I'm 34 years old. I sell three businesses to ARS, and I learned some things that I didn't know existed. And then I got in that game, and then I came back in the market and applied them. And then I grew bigger. And then I did another deal, and then I learned some things there, and I added that to my repertoire, and I kept going. And that's how I've gathered my knowledge, my experience, and frankly, my capital war chest, is by doing these deals. I just got in a place where I didn't really want to be in the air conditioning business when I sold the first three, because that was my exit. But then when I ran around the country and saw people were doing it so much better than I did, I thought, I can do that. And I can do it better. And I just got back into the game. And then, you know, I just liked getting big chunks of money. So I said, I'm just going to do that. I'm just going to build businesses and get big chunks of money. That was my business. But I think it's really, you know, something I really want to impart upon everybody else is that selling a business is not a death sentence and you're not done. You know, it's like, you know, your business is something your own. It's not your life. And, you know, I looked at it as a stepping stone. I built this business. It's worth this today. I think that I'm happy to sell it for that amount of money. And that puts me in a new game where I can learn some things and maybe do my next deal bigger and better. That's how I looked at it and how I got to this place today.
Kind of a dispassionate view of an asset, right? I mean, it's not, I feel this way myself. Your business is kind of like your baby. You took it from nothing. You grew it up to something, but it's an asset. It's not your baby. It's not something that is inextricably linked to you in some way. You can sell it, right? It's like selling a house.
Yeah, exactly. It is. And that's a blind spot. I see a lot of guys that, you know, I understand it. It's their life's work. It's your life's work. But I would say that your attachment to your life's work, you know, you need to have some separation a little bit from that so that you can monetize it properly.
Yeah.
That makes sense?
Yeah. I think that makes perfect sense. Contractors who are interested in selling their businesses, what would you say to them? How should you prepare for it other than having the right mindset and being sort of dispassionate about it? What other things should they be doing?
Well, I think it depends where you're at in the game. You know, if you're winding down and you want out, I mean, no better time to do a deal because the values are so high. So if you don't want to work on it anymore and I'm ready to monetize the asset. It is what it is. For guys who have some, you know, gas in the tank and some more ambition, you know, I would say, and this is how I approached my very first deal, is I got into the business. I was enslaved in the business as a young age. And then, you know, I got through college and I'm like, do I really want to do this? And my dad had passed away. I bought the business from my mom. I owed her money. So I had to get that paid off. And so I had to really go through the business to get out of it. I want to do something cool, like be a stockbroker or something like that. So anyway, way back then, what I did was I said, look, okay, what are the attributes of a business that someone would want to buy? And then I said, what's the attributes of a business someone would want to buy for a lot of money? And so the lot of money answer is you got to have a management team. You got a team that they know that when they pay the money for the business will continue to perform. It has to have business processes and systems in place, and they're tracked with metrics so they know that they have a reasonable predictability that they're going to continue in place and the cash flow of the business is going to continue to perform. They're in a good market where it has opportunity for growth. We have businesses and markets that are we do very well in, but I know it's a short-lived proposition because the labor force, you know, there's smaller markets and the labor force isn't there, so you got to say that one's going to have a stall at one day. So, you know, wherever the markets are. But really, it's management team, systems, processes in place, and a track record of organic growth. That's what really gets the value right there. And I'm not talking, when I talk about management team, I see so many guys, and I made this mistake too, but I see so many guys, you know, taking their best tech and call them the chief operating officer, right? And not really understanding what really that role entails, that's not a management team. A management team is a team of people that understands the processes the business runs by, the overall system of the business, and is executing their particular roles day after day with a proven track record.
So a lot of contractors of our members have grown through acquisition. They've gone out and acquired typically smaller companies in their market, and brought them into the operations in one way or another. Is the market right now with all the private equity, is it making those acquisitions more difficult or more expensive?
Yes. You can still find deals out there, you know. You just got to go looking for them. Me in particular, I like underperforming businesses. That's what I built most of my career on. Now we're in the mode that we want to buy more solid. Well, we want to add more solid management team to help fortify our growth and management team and our future. So, you know, we're looking for that. But I'm always in the market for an underperforming business because they're less expensive. They're easier to maneuver around, right? It's very difficult to go in. You pay a premium price for a business and then you want to improve it. you know, because it can fall apart pretty fast. But the underperforming ones, what do you got to lose, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I've always done well with the underperforming business. And to give you an idea is, I bought Gettle in 2013. It was doing $11 million in sales, losing $3 million a year. So I had to catch the falling knife immediately, right? And then, you know, this year we'll do well over $200 million and, you know, the appropriate amount of profit on the bottom there. So don't discount the underperforming businesses. You find the gems inside the businesses. For me in Gettle, the gem was the brand. The brand was very powerful, had a legacy to it. I knew that I could leverage the brand story significantly and get the lift on that one.
So it's an interesting opportunity for people, for our members. They shouldn't necessarily look for top performing companies. Underperforming companies might actually be better acquisitions for them if they can turn it around.
I think that they're more easily integrated. Now, there's a lot of people that would disagree with me on that statement. More in the investment community, they're like, why would you buy that? It's a lot of work. You can't borrow against it, this and that. But, you know, me at in the weeds, operating the business, that's been the easiest for us to integrate. But I will say this. Let me say this. I would suggest that every contractor, every business owners in this room build their business as if you're building something to sell, because that will be the best running, the best managed, the most profitable business, right? You'll have all those elements in place and it will be the best that it can be. You don't have to sell it, but build it as if you're going to sell it. And then when the opportunity comes along, life changes, somebody makes you an offer you can't refuse, you want to go get into a bigger game, you're ready.
It's the end of my questions. What questions should I have asked you that I didn't? Why should I do all the hard work, you know? By the way, if you guys have questions, I think we've got a little bit of time also.
You know, this is kind of a proud moment for me because I brought my son for the first time, Duncan Goodrich.
Where is he? Let's see him.
Stand up, Dunk.
Oh, yeah. Welcome, Duncan.
Yeah, for my son, though, we're having the, I've coined it, I'm not sure how he feels, but I've coined it the greatest summer of our lives, where he gets to be side by side with me for a whole summer.
What does he call it?
He's not commented yet. But I'm making a song up. I sing to him every time we're together.
That's got to be worth something.
Yeah, about the best summer of our lives. Look how happy he is.
You guys got some questions? There you go.
Yeah, Ken, you say you like to buy underperforming businesses and turn them around. How do you do that? Like I looked at a couple of businesses when I had mine, and guys were charging like $80 an hour. And if I would have bought that business and started charging what I was charging, I don't know whether I would have lost those customers or not. But it's a big question. How would you turn them around? Three easy steps.
Well, I actually got a 10-step, you know, that we put together. But so, you know, I'm a Michael Gerber disciple and applying his book. So what I put together is I said, okay, what are the key elements of a well-operating HVAC and plumbing service business? And the first thing I said was, we got to have the leadership right. So the leadership is the leader and the management team. Is the leadership right? And then I put the statement, can the leader recruit, train, and motivate the best and brightest? Right? Because if you can't do that, you're sunk. If you can't go out and put a team together of the best and brightest and hold them there and retain them and let them grow, not much left, right? And then I go to, are you priced right? Just like you mentioned, the $80 an hour. Well, we know we have all the tools right here at Service Nation, right? So there's no reason why you wouldn't be priced right. Are you paid right? You could be priced right, but not you're paying your people the right amount of money to, one, that fits in the profit plan, but two, in that motivates them to accomplish what you want them to accomplish. And then, are the positions right? Meaning, on an org chart, what does the org chart look like? Are you organized on who does what when? And are the people right? Do they have the character and caliber that you need to execute your plan? Is your lead generation working right? Is your lead conversion, which is your sales, you have a sales system, is that working right? And then what is your client fulfillment system? And by the way, that one seems to be the big miss. I mean, everybody, the first thing you want to do is figure out how to market and sell, right? Because that keeps the cash flow running. But then we give it all up when we do the work because we don't have a client fulfillment system, meaning this is how we do our work. This is how we quality control it. This is what it looks like when it's done before we ever do one, you know? So now I got my lead generation, lead conversion, client fulfillment systems in place and your quantification methods. Like, you know, do you have a system of metrics that is guiding your management team to make the right decisions to hit the profit plan, right? So we just go through every business just through those steps. Is it priced right? They're never priced right. Are they paid right? No, they're never paid right. You know, there's always something right in there, but we just go through that list and we adjust those pieces and parts, and guess what? It starts working. I've always kind of looked at the business as a machine. You know, I'm a tech, right? So, you know, turn on the stat, the little mercury bulb drops, makes a connection, power flows through. It's just a system of things. Look at your business like that and, you know, solve the challenges from that view. Does that make sense?
Yeah, great answer.
I don't know. Some of you guys probably don't know that little mercury thing in the... I know he does.
Got another question right here.
Hey, Ken. Thanks for sharing all that you do. I was listening to a podcast or watching one of the interviews you did. You'd mentioned you don't get too caught up in the multiples when you're building value for a company. Can you give like an example of, I remember you mentioning you look for opportunities and what can I make of it, but can you give some examples of what's that look like? You saw this in this company and where they wanted 4x multiple, but you valued it this other way. Can you give some numbers or examples to that?
Well, I know there's a lot of chest pounding going on right now about the, you know, what you get paid on your multiples of your business in the industry. You know, these guys got that. We happen to win that game, but look, think about it like this. You know, I like buying underperforming businesses that have no profit. So if I pay them a dollar, what's the multiple? It's infinite, right? So the businesses I buy win the multiple game because I'm paying them for no profit. And I would say if you're going to buy an underperforming business, you have to look at it that way. You got to look at it like, you know, what is the opportunity? What's the initial investment I have to put in? What's the opportunity that I have with the business? What will my initial return look like? And what will my long-term return look like? And you win every time in that formula. So in terms of multiples on underperforming businesses, it will always be way more than you think it should be. But in an underperforming world, you're looking at growing it and driving that multiple down. If you buy stocks, it's like dollar cost averaging, right? So don't get too hung up on that. Now, there's companies like the PE group that partnered with us. They paid a big multiple for us. But the way they looked at it is, we paid this for you. If we buy businesses, you know, at a multiple that's half or 75% of yours, every time we do that, the overall multiple of the enterprise goes down. So when we sell it, we make a new multiple. Does that make sense? So anyway, but when coming to buying for us in this group for buying businesses, I wouldn't get too hung up in the multiples because you're going to grow it. So just get in the game. Don't overpay, obviously, but get in the game and start growing it. If you started $1 million in profit and you tripled it, you know, your multiple was negligible, right? And that's how they look at it too, these investors.
All right. They're yelling at me from the back of the room, so we're going to have to wrap this up. Did Ken do a great job for you guys? Yeah. Thank you so much for doing this. I appreciate it.
We're always looking for good ideas and interviews for our podcast. If you have an idea or maybe you think you should be interviewed, just shoot an email to profilesinprosperity@serviceroundtable.com. That's profilesinprosperity@serviceroundtable.com. If you think what we're doing has any value, it would be very helpful if you would give us a great rating on iTunes. Thanks for your support. Hope to see you again soon. Bye.